You were talking about Portland, weren't you? I looked at something in Portland, and the families that we took care of were families, transfer families mostly, who come in, and of course the city, those who lived in the city, were taken care of by the public welfare as a rule, and in case of an emergency or something, we would help. But, the majority of the families that were taken care of were transient families. And also the men who were, we also had an employment office connection to the welfare office. And we would find jobs for men who came in looking for work, for people who all needed yard work done, or things like that. Families would call in for men. So that, of course, was quite a job in itself, too. And I used to have a secretary that helped, of course, in taking care of some of this. But some of the people were very appreciative, and others were. It's surprising how some people, if they can't get what they want, why they're very, they get very angry. Mm-hmm. I remember one colored woman coming in one day, and she was on welfare, so of course I wouldn't give her any assistance because I knew she was. And oh, she was so angry with me. She went out on the street and she was yelling and tearing on. And finally a policeman came along and took her away. But sometimes they do get very angry with you if you don't know what they want. Another time a man came in on crutches, and I also knew he was on welfare. So I didn't assist him, of course, and he was so mad at me. Oh, he was so angry. And I didn't know what he might do because he had those crutches, you know, he could hit me over the head with it. But he, then, of course, he went on out. He went across the street and he stood there, and oh, he was so mad. But as a whole, I think the people were not very appreciative. Being helped. But you run across a few occasionally that are not. But the families were transient people. I recall one a case where a man came in, the family came in, and they had had him. I don't know where they started from, but anyway, they had was hauling a trailer, and they'd had a wreck with that, and so the family had come in before the father had, he had stayed to get things straightened up, I guess, but on the way, but the family had come ahead, and they were sent to my office, and so I had placed them in a hotel. Well, this poor man, when he came, he had no idea where his family was, and he was just in a terrible state of mind. And finally, he came, he was sent to me, and I took him to where his family was. And the thing of it was, he had a brother living in Portland, and his family had gone there, but because of their condition, they were so poorly dressed and dirty and everything from all the trip and having no care, they wouldn't let them stay And so they had sent them to the Salvation Army. So the man, when he went to his brothers, they didn't know where they were either, really. And so he was just in a terrible state of mind when he came to me. And so I was so glad because I could help him, did help the family, and could tell where they were. But you have many cases that are, you really feel that it's worthwhile to help them. I had a couple come in one time who had been on vacation, and they had, were on the verge of separation. And they had taken this vacation to see if they could sort of get things straightened out between them. And so they came in for me to talk to them. And they didn't want assistance, but they just wanted to buy some help, you know. Mm-hmm. So I had talked with each one of them, and I talked to both of them and together, and I prayed with them. And they went on their way. They seemed to be happy. I never did hear from them afterwards, but I felt that, hoping that it had done some good so that they would, could fix up their lives together. But it's, it's an interesting job to in that type of work, because you do feel like there's some people you're able to help, and some, you know, it doesn't mean much to them. I mean, it's just mm-hmm. like little financial help you give them. But it is a very interesting time I spent there. I was there, I must have been there 4 or 5 years on that job. And then it was very interesting.
Sounds like this kind of work is really unpredictable.
Okay.
Sounds like this kind of work is really unpredictable. It's yes. hard to know what will happen next.
Oh, yes, you never know, of course. It's sometimes you wonder if you've really been able to do anything good or worthwhile, because you deal with people who, like, sometimes we give out meal tickets. We have a restaurant and a place where we send people to eat, you know. And then also a lodging place, and we give them tickets. Well, if they can sell that ticket for a little money or something, why they do that? And to somebody else, you know. And you never knew whether you were really helping a person or not. That's one thing about welfare work. It's difficult to feel that you are really, in some cases you really feel that others, you know, you can't do much with them. So, if there's any questions you'd like to ask, maybe something that I don't think about.
Well, where did you go after you were in Portland?
Oh, in Portland, I went to, in 1951, I was sent to the Holman Hospital in Oakland.
Oh.
And, of course, that was a new experience for me, too, because it's just a different type of work, and there are many mothers, you know. And I went there not knowing anything much about that work, because of course when I was in the Evangeline working there, that was such a different type of work, because it was with working girls living in Evangeline, and it was altogether different type of girls. But in this Holman Hospital, it's all pregnant girls, and I had never had too much experience with anything like that. But I had the first job I had was to supervise the girls' work in their dormitories and doing their work, you know. And some of them knew so little about doing any kind of work.
Oh.
It was unsurprising to me, because I was brought up different than that, and my children were too. So, and little girls, you know, not knowing how to do anything, I couldn't fathom it. But one woman came. Well, she was not a real young girl either. And she came to me one morning. She said, "The major said, would you please show me how to make my bed?" And, well, I was so taken back. I didn't know what to think, you know, a girl that had never made her bed. And so I was sure, after that, I'll show you how to make your bed. So I went and showed her how to make a bed. But I couldn't see how any girl could grow up to be as old as she was and never know how to make her bed. Mm-hmm. I wondered what kind of a home she came from and what kind of a mother she had. But anyway, I showed her how to make her bed. But it was so surprising, you know, the type of people you meet. And then I was taken off of that job and made the receptionist. I had to, of course, I had other office work to do. And I interviewed some of the girls that came in when the social worker was off duty. When they came in off hours, I would do the interviewing of the girls as they came in. And I did some of their case work, you know. But it was quite an experience dealing with these girls. And some of them would put the babies out for adoption, and others, of course, keep them. But it was a very interesting work. I enjoyed my stay there. It was about 3 years, I think. No, I was there. About a year and a half, I think, maybe.
What were most of the women who came there, were they still minors, or did they still live at home, or were they working themselves, or?
Well, these girls that came there were they're sometimes a long way from home, you know. When they were pregnant, and they didn't want to tell their parents or something, you know, or the parents might have known about it and sent them away. See. So that happens very often in these cases where the girls become pregnant. And so they just live right there then. And some agencies send the girls too. They might be paid by some, you know, their care might be paid for by some agency that sent them there. Or the army might have to take care of them, or the girls might have money to pay for themselves. So that's the way the boys as far as finance is concerned. And they would stay until after their pregnancy, until their baby was born. Then if they were placing their baby for adoption, why they would, of course, they wouldn't even see their baby as a girl. And then the girls who kept their baby, well, then, of course, they would have to help them to find a place, or they would maybe go back home, or whatever the case might be. But it was a very interesting program. Then, I was trying to think of anything else. From there, I was sent to in charge of our emergency lodge in San Francisco. Oh. I don't know if you tell me all I know today. I'm afraid you don't.
Still have lots of questions.
Yeah, that is for mothers and children, or single girls, or anybody who's in need. That was a certainly different type of work than I'd ever been into. We had mothers with children sometimes, several children maybe. Or we had women. I used to have a lot of pregnant girls too that come in there waiting to get into our own home or in the Catholic institution or some other place that was taking care of pregnant girls. In fact, I had 13, I think, at one time, the pregnant girls waiting to be taken care of. I used to wonder, of course, I never had any experience while I was in the home and hospital with the nursery or the delivery room or anything. And I used to think, oh, I don't know what I'd do if one of these girls had a baby while she's here. But it never happened, fortunately. But they were waiting for their time, and then they would go to either the Salvation Army or whatever other place when they could take them in. But we'd have I've had the police come 2:00 in the morning, would call me, and they'd have a girl, somebody to, a mother and children, and they're stranded or something. And they would call me, and I'd have to get up and go down, and they'd take them in and get them settled for the night. And that happened real often. And we'd have older women ahead there sometimes, who were sent there by the welfare department or some other agency. And I had a woman who was working for the city, but she was an alcoholic. She had the problem of drinking. And she would go a long time, and seemed to be trouble, and then all of a sudden she'd go off on it. But fortunately, she always stayed downtown when she when she went on those. And she was a very nice person too. But she would drink, and then she'd go get a room downtown, and I wouldn't see her until she was all right again, and she'd come back. And she was there for quite a while. And then I had an elderly woman that was there, and she had problems drinking. And then one day, somebody came to me and told me that somebody was in the room with her. There was one room that had two beds in it, and this girl had been in with her. And evidently, she had brought in some liquor to her, because they were both just drunk as I could be. So whoever was came to me and said, well, they were drinking, and I went up to the room, and it was just before dinner, and they were insisting on going out to dinner. And I said, you can't go down to the dining room in this condition. Oh, but we are going down. I said, oh, no, but you're not. And I had a bad time with them, and finally I had to call the police, and they took them away, because I couldn't have that sort of thing in there. And I said, I don't prefer any charges against them, but just take them so they won't be disturbing the whole household. And the policemen were very cooperative with me in that respect, because I couldn't have that sort of thing in the house, you know. And this girl evidently had brought it in, because the old lady I'd never had any trouble with her before. And she'd been there quite a while. And so they came and took them. And then I had a young girl there who's the doctor's daughter. And they say that they had spent just thousands of dollars on that girl, I guess, trying to get her straightened out. But she still was an alcoholic. And one evening I heard an awful commotion in one of the dorms. And so I looked far from my apartment, and so I had to see what was happening. And she was sitting on the bed, and I never thought about her being intoxicated, you know. But I said, well, you girls will have to quiet down. You're disturbing everybody in the house. So I went back to my apartment in a little while, like all this noise came again, only worse. So I went in that time. I went in clear into the dorm, and I could see what was happening, and she was just out. And she was a beautiful girl. It just made me sick to know when I saw what condition she was in. So the only thing I could do that night, too, was call the police. And so she was disturbing everybody. Nobody could really have gotten any rest. And so I called the police, and she wouldn't even get dressed so she could put on her shoes or anything and go downstairs. They had to come up and get her when they came. And the police said to me, "What in the world is this girl doing here?" And I said, "Well, she was referred to me." And he said, "Well, of course, they'd had experience with her before, I guess." Mm-hmm. And so they took her. I never did hear from her again, but I often wondered what had happened to her. She was a beautiful girl. I guess the doctor had just done everything they could to take care of her, but she insisted on leaving him. But I didn't have too much experience with only one other woman, I think, had ever had any trouble with the dreams. And she had gotten a job. She'd been referred to me after she was out of work, and she had been referred to me from somebody. And so she got a job while she was there working for the city. Or the government, anyway, and some sort of a job. So she got along pretty good for a few days, and all of a sudden she didn't show up. So I figured, well, something happened. She got drinking. So about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard the doorbell ring, and I never answered it unless I'd have a call from the police or somebody. So and she rang and rang and rang the bell, and I didn't answer. So she came around to the side door, which was right down under my apartment. And she took off her shoe and dropped the glass and opened the door. So as soon as I heard the noise there, I came down. And here was the policeman with her. He brought her out, not a policeman, but a cab driver. He had brought her out in a cab. And she had $100 in my safe. So she wanted her money. So I said, "Okay." I said, "I'll get your money out." And I said, "I'm keeping some to pay for the dinner you broke." Well, she didn't object to that. I kept having a little bit to pay for that. So I gave it to her, and I said, "Now, don't you ever come back here again in this condition." And so she never did come back. But you see, those alcoholics, they just can't keep away from her, it seems like. Mm-hmm. She had that good job. She could have done well and kept herself in good shape. But it don't happen that way. But I had a lot of women come in with families that were not. I had one woman had a little boy about 3 years old, and he was a darling. And he used to love to come and watch me and work in the office, you know, and he wanted the typewriter, the telephone, all these seemed to be, he was so interested in. And so one day I went up to my apartment for a minute or something, and I came back out, left the office door open, and here was Larry in there, and he had the receiver off the telephone. And I said to him, "Larry, I said, what are you doing?" And he looked at me, and he put the receiver down, and he said, "I gotta go make my bed." Put his hand behind his back, you know, and it was the cutest thing. But he never said anything else. He said, "I gotta go make my bed." And away he went, fast as he could go upstairs. But he was so cute. I just loved him. But it was so gratifying in people that you really felt you could help and do something with. And there were a lot of them that were appreciative for them. I had two girls come in. It was right at Christmas time, or just before Christmas. And they had run away from home, and I think they lived up around the, not too far away, somewhere around that area, but anyway, they left home, and it's just kids. And they'd run out of money, and they evidently saw some of the Christmas workers around the street with the couples, and they had referred them to Pioneer's Lodge. So they came out, and of course, Christmas time, I always did so much for the girls. I give them a good time and everything, you know. So these kids, these young girls, they told me that they had come to visit an aunt. And when they got there, the aunt wasn't home, wasn't there. And of course, I kind of doubted the story, but then I let it go, and I treated them just like they were. And the other girls, and then they had such a good time. And so one evening, they decided to call home. So they called home, and somebody was coming to pick them up. So they came and got the girls, and one of the girls had left a letter for me. She was afraid to face me, I guess, with her story. So she left the letter, and she said they were so ashamed of themselves for lying to me. She said, "You have been so wonderful to us, and you've showed us such a good time since we've been here, and think that we lied to you and didn't tell you the truth." And she left that letter for me, so they came and took the girls home. But there were so many interesting people, you know, so, but that was one of the most educational jobs I think I ever had, as far as people were concerned, because you meet so many different kinds of people, and it was very interesting. But I had done some money that was sent to in appreciation for what had been done for them there. And so I bought new tables and chairs for the dining room, which was a real nice thing, I thought. They at least appreciated not to send some donations to the place. And so I had refurnished the dining room with that. I didn't know that. But it was really interesting.
If you'd like, we can stop for the day.
Okay.
If you'd like, we can stop.
I think I better because